The median household income for Black and Latino households in Wilmington is half that of white households. That's according to a study by Prosperity Now, a DC-based nonprofit that researches and develops policy solutions to promote financial stability, especially for low-income people and people of color. The study was conducted as part of the organization's Building High-Impact Nonprofits of Color initiative, which is working with several local nonprofits, including Christina Cultural Arts Center, the Urban League, and the Kingswood Community Center. Ebony White is Associate Director for the Racial Wealth Divide Initiative at Prosperity Now. Ebony White, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
So just to start off, for people who aren't familiar with the term, what is a racial wealth divide?
So the racial wealth divide, and some people call it the racial wealth divide, some people call it the racial wealth gap. But what it means is that there is a large gap in the number of white households or white individuals who actually hold wealth compared to people of color. And so a lot of times people construe income with wealth. And so just because you have a lot of income does not mean it aligns to the amount of the wealth. Like, let's say if I'm a Black female and I make $30,000 and my, you know, a white lady makes $30,000. Our wealth is completely different, and wealth is like the assets that you have, and it's typically done by generational wealth. And so a lot of times when you go back in our history, because of the way that the foundation of our economy was created, a lot of the wealth that would have, you know, came to Native Americans, African Americans, and Latinos was stripped from us. And so we don't have that generational wealth that others may have.
So you and your team studied the racial wealth divide in Wilmington. So how do Wilmington's white residents and residents of color stack up in terms of financial security and wealth?
Yeah, so Wilmington definitely is a small city, but it has a lot of the same challenges of a lot of the larger cities like Chicago or Detroit, for an example. And even comparable to some of the national data that we see, it's pretty much in alignment. But one of the indicators that, you know, really speaks to what's happening for residents locally here on Wilmington is that, so, and you mentioned it, so the average medium household income for white households is $60,772, whereas for Blacks is half of that, the $30,034, and Latinos is similar to Blacks at $32,976. I will say in this area, Asian Americans are doing better than whites. They're at $70,461. But it continues to look different. One of the things that is very much a good indicator of some of the struggles that families are having in Wilmington is around liquid asset poverty. And liquid asset poverty is essentially a family's ability to be able to have 3 months of savings to be able to get by if an emergency wasn't happen. Like, it can be health, it can be car issues, you know, things happen. But there's a lot of families where something happened, it's going to really put them in a very worse off situation. A lot of times they don't have savings. And so there are 61.3% individuals and households of colors that's actually living in poverty here in Wilmington. And so that really speaks to one's ability to be able to get through hard times. And there's home ownership rates. You know, we always talk about home ownership rates because that's one of the main assets and ways in which families are able to create and build some type of wealth for their families and have that generational wealth. And so due to a lot of policies and practices historically, they really prevented families of color of being able to even own houses due to discriminating underwriting practices. It really helped set the foundation of what we're seeing today. Which is why there's still a lot of residents of color that are still experiencing challenges in being able to gain home ownership and not even really truly understanding what they're getting themselves into. And so the home ownership rates here in Wilmington is pretty comparable to what we see nationally. Right now it's 58.2% of white households have homes compared to a little over 40% for blacks. And also the same for Asian Americans, which is actually kind of interesting given that Asian Americans do make more money than what the white residents are here making, but they're still pretty much at the same space as blacks and Latinos that's currently making 30%. But then even when you look at homeownership rates, you have to look at, so what are their ability to be able to maintain that house? And so then we look at some of the cost burden situations that some of the families are in. And we can look at that from not only the homeownership aspect, but also renters. And the cost burdens is basically where we're looking at if individuals are earning more than 30% of what they have to pay, like rent or and so a lot of times there's a lot of individuals, and we're seeing that roughly over 60% of people are in those cost burden situations. And so how can we have families in spaces where they're not struggling, you know, to have a roof on their house? Like, how can we look at the fact that if the medium income of blacks is 30,000, but it costs 70,000 really to have a quality life here, there's gonna be a lot of challenges for these individuals. And so those are the things that we try to lift up through the data. And we hope that this data is a tool and resource that not only the nonprofits that we work with here, but other stakeholders on the ground are able to really utilize this data to really move forward the work that they're trying to do, and to really be able to use it as an advocacy tool for the clients that they're advocating for.
Got it. One thing I want to ask you about in the data is, as we look at these various indicators of disparities, are they growing or shrinking in Wilmington? I know that you looked a little bit at the effect of certain things, for example, the Great Recession or mm-hmm. the Financial Center Development Act of Delaware, on the way that this shakes out?
Mm-hmm. That's a hard question to answer, only because with the profile that we did, we were only able to use it through the Census Bureau, and when we had the district report, the most recent was 2016. Mm-hmm. And so we're definitely able to see that there's a lot of shifts in the demographics, which definitely has impacted the medium incomes. There's definitely been a white flight that has happened here in Wilmington, and as a result of that, the medium income has went down here. What we see is that a lot of those white residents have moved to the suburbs. You know, Philadelphia is not too far, and so that has happened along with a lot of Latino families also moving into the area. Blacks for the residents has been pretty constant. But the medium income has definitely went down. And when we go back and look at, you know, some of the things that happened historically to, you know, to really increase the population originally here, and we look at the racial wealth divide, it's actually worse off. But that's, again, comparable to what we see national.
It was worse off then, or it's worse off now?
It's worse off now than what mm-hmm. it was originally, because when there were an influx of, residents of color moving into Wilmington, it was because of jobs and such. And so it made the economy boost up. But then as people start to move out, it really switched things around. And what we're finding is that really nationally, we're not in the best position. The racial wealth gap has pretty much widened over the years, and so we're really trying to lift this issue up, because if we don't make some drastic changes, it's not going to get better. And it took us a long time to get to this point, so it's not going to get better overnight. But really trying to look at, so what are some of the policies and practices that we need to think about to really help to, decrease this gap.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then I guess moving into the realm of solutions, you, well, I guess the reason that you conducted this study has to do with kind of looking at solutions, the Building High Impact Nonprofits of Color initiative. So talk to me a little bit about that and why, what was the impulse to do a racial wealth gap study for that?
So the racial wealth divide studies is definitely, it's a one of the tools that come out of the Building High Impact for Nonprofits of Color initiative. And that is an initiative that we've been doing at Prosperity Now since 2015. It is funded by JP Morgan Chase. And so with that program, we provide capacity building and executive leadership development training to nonprofits that's led by people of color that's working in the ecosystem of asset building or economic mobility. And I say economic mobility because a lot of times people don't understand that language can really turn people off. Mm-hmm. And when you say the racial wealth divide or the racial wealth gap, just using the word wealth does not resonate with a lot of the clients that our leaders are working with, because they can't even think about wealth because they're too busy trying to have some economic sustainability. They're too busy trying to have some increased income, a good job. And so wealth is like very much one of those things that's down the line for them. And so we're really trying to change that narrative as well. But the reason why we do this work and giving them this capacity building is that we work with them around, so what are some of the challenges that you're having internally with the infrastructure to really provide them some of the customized training that they need to move their work along. A lot of our leaders, actually all of our leaders, they're experts in their space. They know what they're doing. They're making some good improvement in clients' lives. And some of them just don't have the time or the money to make the investments in themselves to really slow down to see, okay, so what can I be doing even on a bigger landscape? A lot of time, people already know that these things are happening for their residents. They know that, you know, their liquid asset property, like they know this stuff, but they don't have the data and the numbers to support it. Mm-hmm. And so what this does is provide that for them. And so what we do is we help them to be able to understand how to read the data, how to analyze the data, how to connect it to the work that they're doing, how to connect it to the clients and the experiences that they're having, and how to really use it to not only improve maybe how they're telling their story, but maybe also improve the funding that they get, improve their ability to advocate and to work in the policy space. And we really try to increase their networks to really get them in spaces and involved in dialogues that they're currently not involved in to really help move the work that they're trying to do. And so Wilmington, Delaware and Dallas, Texas are the latest of the two cities that are part of this cohort. We have also done this in Miami, Chicago, New Orleans, and Baltimore. And, you know, it's something that what I enjoy most about this is that a lot of time the leaders, you know, after they get these reports, they say, this is what I needed. You know, I knew this stuff, but I just didn't have the concrete data that I needed to really provide it. And so, some of the challenges with some of the national data sets that we see out here is that it's not disaggregated by race, which is not helpful for them. And so that's another thing that we're intentional about, is just making sure that it's going to be a tool that's really going to speak to the experiences of the residents here locally.
Mm-hmm. And so can you list a few of the local nonprofits that you're working with on this program?
I sure can. So I am working with Christina Cultural Arts Center. I'm also working with the Urban League. I'm working with Kingswood Community Center. I'm working with Delaware Homeless Veterans. I'm working with First State Community Loan. And I'm also working with DCRAC.
Okay.
And they're some awesome leaders that's doing some good work. And so it's definitely been a privilege to be able to partner with them.
One thing I briefly want to circle back to is when you were talking about the way that Wilmington compares to the nation in terms of its racial wealth divide, mm-hmm. is this like just nationwide averages? Is this cities? How does it compare to small cities? Like, you know, I guess size-wise the same.
So in the racial wealth divide profile, and another thing I would just want to put out there is that if you haven't seen it, it is available on Prosperity Now's website. But in the very back of the book is where we kind of do some comparisons. And so across a whole bunch of different data sets, there's some comparisons of Wilmington, Delaware, compared to Newcastle County, also compared to the statewide Delaware, and then also compared nationally to the United States. The only other, the only other community that I would say that you might be able to do some comparison with Wilmington with is Baltimore, and that's only because we have this report. So it's kind of hard for me to say how Delaware compares to other cities of their size because there's not a lot of reports to make that comparison. Mm-hmm. But I will say with Baltimore, there's a lot of similarities in that it's not like a crisis to where I would say we should not be looking at as a society. We need to look at this just as a whole. Like it's an issue that's not getting better, and the racial economic inequities that are existing in communities are happening everywhere. And unfortunately, Wilmington is not special to the point where they're not experiencing the same thing. And mm-hmm. So it's definitely comparable. Like I said, I think Baltimore would probably be the closest city that I can think of off the top of my head that has a lot of similarities.
And are there any sort of outliers in our data? Like, are any of our indicators mm-hmm. strike you as unusual?
I mean, they're all our outliers in regards to just the challenges that they're raising up for the residents. I would say that, and I'm trying to think about if there is one that really stands out. I would say maybe the households with zero net worth is a good one to raise up, and that's because currently, so Black and Latinos is roughly around 30%, which means that they have no wealth. They're in the negative, compared to some of the whites households, which is currently at 14%. And I say that because when you look at education, for example, a lot of time there's a lot of things that people think are, the solutions, like education is the solution. And education is not the great equalizer that we want it to be. I can go out and get a doctorate degree and I still will not be able to create the same wealth as a white person who has a associate's degree. There's a lot of studies done on that. And what we find is that when we're looking at like zero net worth, for example, there are some Black families that are like with that 32% net worth, it can easily have a bachelor's degree. And so what I say is, it's not important, or I'm not gonna say it's not important, but I challenge people to not compare Wilmington, but to really look at why Wilmington is where it is today, and really look at the disparities that's happening in Wilmington, because even though there may be a similar city, they may not gotten there the same way. So what I really challenge people to do is really look at, so what are some of the policies and the practices and the solutions that other communities may have been doing with similar issues, and then see how that can then be customized for Wilmington. Because all these communities have, there's very few communities that don't have these issues. Typically, even in some of the most whitest communities, it's really hard to still not see some disparities with some of their households that's people of color. And so how can we find solutions that work for all the people in communities? And I am a phantom believer that if you find solutions that's working for low income, especially low income residents of color, you're gonna find solutions that work for all people, because there's a lot of mm-hmm. white residents that's also poor as well. And so how can we get to you know, some real transformation on the ground for these residents that's really trying to make it from day to day.
So let's talk about policy, okay. I guess, from this point. So your organization does look at, I think you have a set of 24 or so policies that you track in every state.
Yeah.
And I took a look, it looked like of the recommended policies, Delaware has about 8
mm-hmm.
Enacted on that scorecard. So some of those things were, I guess, protections against predatory loaning. There were some, I guess, wealth or asset checks on public assistance, you know, homeownership
mm-hmm.
Things. So talk to me a little bit about what you see as being successful policies to combat the racial wealth divide.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Delaware, like, where should we go policy-wise to try to solve this?
So this is not my wheelhouse, okay. The policy space. So I'm going to be honest. I know what my strong suit is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so we do have a state and local policy team that actually does that work. And so and we're actually in the midst of trying to figure out how we can really, you know, like, even though, you know, we identify some of the policies, that's the good policies to really improve access and economic mobility for families. We're trying to see, so what does this look like on the ground, you know, for communities? And what does this look like for our leaders to advocate for these policies and best practices that's that we find our prosperity now to be like a good policy versus a policy that really embeds movement. And so given that I'm not from Wilmington, I don't like to be the solution, or because I feel like the solution should come from the residents, it should come from the community, and I mean to be quite honest, an outsider. I live in DC, but I am from Michigan. And so I feel like what we need to do is give definitely some exposure to the policies that are definitely increasing families' ability to have some economic mobility and sustainability. But what that looks like on the ground is where the challenge comes from. So there's a lot of policies that's in place that were meant to help families on the ground, and they're not, because of the way that they're being implemented. So I think we're in a good space where we can look at what other communities are doing and what they didn't do, to really see, okay, so how can we help ensure some accountability in these policies? So like, even with the policies that was raised that are good policies for Delaware, how are they being implemented? Is it really making the impact that we wanna make? You know, that's the questions that I would wanna ask. And I know that we have some of our leaders who are actively, they're having discussions and they're trying to see, and we're trying to see how we can support them around even like minimum wage. Like, so like, there's a lot of basic practices that are just not being implemented the way that it was supposed to be implemented to really help families. And so where can we learn from other communities is where, you know, I probably would go. But I can say what policies and practices I think would be beneficial around economic mobility. But how it looks in the community is up to the community, and the accountability that our state and local, well, you guys, state and local representatives put in place to make sure that that's put in place correctly is really like the soft, sweet spot of it, you know, because I see a lot of breakdown, you know, and as you know, like, just for an example, there's a lot of communities that's in, you know, they're really concerned around gentrification because it's happening everywhere. You know, DC is one of the main places gentrification is happening. And I know that there's a lot of work being done here in Wilmington to do some community revitalization. Mm-hmm. If I can get the word out today. And so how can we learn from other communities that have gone through this process to make sure that people and residents don't feel pushed out? You know, it's great for the community. It boosts the economy. It, you know, it gives residents quality homes. It increases jobs. I mean, it does all those great things. But at the same time, there's always some folks sometimes that are being pushed out. So how can we stop that from happening? And I think we should do it by looking at communities that have some lessons learned.
Okay, and for Delaware, what do you think would be some of those model communities to check out?
Well, I know that, I'm trying to think of, so we do have this, I know that there's a lot of work that's being done in Atlanta around it. They have some models, and I believe, and actually, so I know the work that's being done here, specifically around, you know, if we want to stay on the gentrification space, with Kingswood Community School, they're one of our organizations that we're working with through the project. The Purpose Bill has a network of communities that's undergoing this model, you know, and they have had a lot of successes. I know Atlanta being one of those, of the newest to be part of it, and I also know that that's a model that we can learn from, you know, and so I think one of the advantage that Kingswood has as far as going into this this model is that there is such a big network that there's a lot of models and communities to kind of learn from, you know, and so they don't have to go into it blindsided. Another thing that's also great about it is that there's a lot of entities that's already coming together here in Wilmington to invest in it across sectors with the government, and there's a lot of support and movement and energy behind it. I would say, given that I come from a background in civic engagement, that having the community, you know, center in everything that you do is definitely one of the practices that I would say is beneficial to whatever it is that you're looking at doing, having a community voice, making sure that they're involved in it, making sure that you're listening to the community and not doing onto the community, partnering with the community, and just making sure that, you know, leaders come in all shapes and forms. And so even making sure that youth voice is part of it. You know, there's a lot of good practices out here that has showed to be beneficial to making sure that things are implemented the way that it should be. People just don't want to take the time to do it. You know, so how can we take the time to make sure that everybody's voice is at the table? How can we take the time to make sure that, you know, the youth are involved in it and that the elders are involved in it? How can we have some intergenerational learnings from each other? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that has definitely proven to be good, but we just don't take the time to do it.
Well, that's all my questions, unless you wanted to add anything else.
I would just add, you know, again, definitely check out our Prosperity Now website. We do have some reports for all of the cities that I named. We also have some national reports that Prosperity Now do. And even the report that you mentioned, the Municipal Blueprint, that's the policy report. Awesome, good reports, and they're all meant to really help to raise the issue of economic ability, asset development, wealth creation, financial education. You know, it's really meant to improve access to all, and to really help leaders and the movement shakers, I would say, on the ground to be able to really have some transformative work and to really be able to shift some of the dynamics that's currently happening in our society and to get us to a point where we can really start to see the racial wealth gap to decrease.
Ebony White, Associate Director for the Racial Wealth Divide Initiative at the nonprofit Prosperity Now, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a good time.